Hey, on the telephone right now, we have Taylor Baldry joining us. Taylor is from Minneapolis, and on his website, he's described, self-described, I believe, as a brainstormer, artist, designer, and a large-nosed person. Taylor, welcome to the Roadhouse. Nice to have you.
Hey, hi, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You know, last fall, I noticed you in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. You had a table set up along Lake Calhoun and a sign advertising free conversations, and I thought, wow, that is just too cool. It's nice to have you aboard. We want to talk about that. What an idea.
Thanks, Mom.
Now, Bob and I, my co-host Bob Carter, and I have talked about it many times on this program about kind of the lack of personal contact that seems to be, you know, progressing in our society. Where did you come up with this idea?
Okay, so this conversation or this this project grew out of the need to kind of reconnect with people after I was came back to America after teaching in Japan for 2 years. So this seemed like a really great way to talk to people who I'd normally not really get a chance to talk to, and with this venue, this model of talking to people, I get right to the heat of the meat and get right to a topic that we can talk about rather than going through chit-chat and talking to people who may not want to talk to you or what have you.
Now, you have several websites. We contact you through email. So you're not really, this isn't an anti-technology stand. What further thoughts did you have about conversation that would prompt you to do this experiment?
Okay, yeah. So this isn't like any means to like a way that's anti-technology, because everyone's using technology, and so it's more of a way, how do we incorporate technology and also having meaningful conversations together? So what can we do to be more engaged when we're meeting people or talking face-to-face and not be distracted by our cell phones or checking Facebook or whatever at the same time?
Now, what kind of method did you use? You had a table set up, you know, you had the sign, free conversations, but how did you keep the conversation flowing with these new people? Did you have some kind of guidelines for how it worked?
Yeah, so I had a table set up, usually in a park, and I had a couple chairs set up around it. And then I had a sandwich board that said free conversations, so anyone walking by could stop by and then also look at a menu that I had set up on an easel. And the menu was set up far enough away that people can come check out the menu, and if they don't want to sit down and have a conversation, they don't have to, they're not committed to. And on the menu, I had different topics of conversation. So we had, like, starters on the menu, which starters would be, like, talking about the weather, talking about, you know, what book you're reading recently. And then on the menu, we had entrees, which would be, like, a little bit more meaty, like politics or religion or whatever. And then people can decide if they want to select a topic from the menu and then come down and have a conversation with me, basically.
Now, how did people accept this? I mean, did you get people jeering at you, or would people just walk up and sit down, or what happened?
You know, the first time I did it in a vacant lot in Minneapolis, and it was right next to a busy street, so I had people kind of honking at me, and I was dressed up, I was wearing a tie, I kind of looked like a professor, and I was sitting at this table, and people would be honking at me or coming by just to see, you know, what was I doing. And a lot of people would ask, you know, what are you selling? Are you in a cult? You know, why are you doing this? And so a lot of people were very skeptical at first. And then once I told them what the whole project was about, a lot of people thought it was a great idea, and they'd come sit down and have a chat with me.
What kind of things did you learn from this project? And I know it's still ongoing.
I learned that I think most people are more willing to sit down and talk to a stranger than most or not. I learned how to put together a sandwich board. Actually, one guy came by to give me tips on how to fix up my sandwich board sign because he thought it didn't look good enough. So,
I see.
So that was very helpful. So thank you if you're still out there. I just learned a lot about different people. I talked to people from like all walks of life and ages, and my favorite topic of conversation was talking to people about ghost stories. That was the topic on the menu. So
about ghost stories.
Yeah, ghost stories. Because, you know, everyone has like their own personal ghost story or a story that they heard from a friend or someone, and so that's always a popular subject.
I have to remember that. It usually doesn't enter my conversation.
Yeah, you should throw that out there next time you're in need of a conversation. It's a great icebreaker.
Well, I'm a little older than you, Taylor, and yet it still comes into my thoughts as I, go through this life that people older than me were better conversationalists. They told better stories. They remembered the jokes, etc. How do you find that at your age, responding to people that you know?
As far as people same age as me?
No, just in general. Do you find that younger people don't do as well with conversation? Aren't storytellers? Maybe you can just expand on that.
I think my generation in particular, there's a lot of people who are more reluctant to talk to a stranger or even talk in the grocery store line. And when a lot of people, they do talk, it can be very one-sided, and they'll just be waiting until you finish talking so that they can start talking again, rather than having a very engaged conversation and really listen to you.
So maybe the art of listening is more a part of it than the art of conversation.
Yeah, definitely is. I think that's, 90% of conversation is just listening to what the other person has to say. And for the most part, when I was hosting the table, I would just be listening to people the whole time and hearing their stories, because so many people just want to talk to someone, and it doesn't matter if they're a stranger in a Argyle vest in a park, and they just want to tell their story or have someone to talk to, I think.
Now, I had an experience, and I've had these many times, and I think everybody has. The other day, I was waiting in an office waiting room, and somebody was sitting in there talking on their iPhone. So not only are they talking, you have to listen. I mean, you can't go anywhere. They're loud enough. Everybody else is quiet in there, and everybody has to listen to this conversation. I just find that a huge lack of respect. Is that becoming more accepted, that those types of behaviors?
I think so. I think that's becoming more common. I mean, to a certain degree, that's always going to be a little bit obnoxious, but as more people are doing it, for better or for worse, I think it's going to become much more accepted. And I think that's just one of the things that we have to deal with,
And how about...
Did you join the conversation? Did you start talking to other people?
There was myself and another person who was polite enough to walk out into the entryway to talk on the phone. And then, of course, the woman who was at the desk. So there wasn't anybody else that I was impelled to talk to, and especially not the guy who was on the phone.
that could have been a great opportunity, an icebreaker to start a conversation with somebody else about
while they're on the phone.
Annoying the other guy was.
Yeah, if somebody else had been there, it would have been. What do you think in general about the use, or I don't really want to say abuse, but misuse maybe, of only in the sense that it's so pervasive of social networking and or emails or Twitters, as opposed to what you were taking part in, an actual person-to-person conversation.
What do you mean by the misuse of...
What I mean, that
you would phrase it as like a as misuse or like an overuse.
Overuse, I guess, is a better word.
Yeah.
Yes, overuse.
I think younger people, it's just, you know, a part of your of their life. So I wouldn't say, like, from my perspective, it's not really overuse because it's so integrated in my generation's lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
But it's how do you kind of also incorporate the social media and technology with having meaningful and engaged conversations when you're talking to someone face-to-face, or just recognizing that social media and internet is on one side, and you can also have, you know, a face-to-face conversation with someone, and that can be equally rewarding as being on the internet and, you know, typing on Twitter or whatever.
Yes, I find that a couple weeks ago I was skiing with a group of friends. We're all close friends, and we found ourselves sitting around the living room area at night, and I looked around and every one of us was engaged with their own internet activities, and we weren't even talking. You know, and here's people that are very aware, you know, that you're there to have conversations and interact, and there we were doing just the opposite.
Mm-hmm. But there's definitely, a time and place to use that, but, you know, like in your situation, you could take a little self-check, and if you're on a smartphone or something and you're in a room with a group of friends or people that you could be talking to, maybe you shouldn't be on your phone and...
Or computer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Where are you going to go with I think it's you call a project The Conversationalist?
The Conversationalist, yes.
Where do you go with this next? Are you going to continue when the weather warms up a little bit? Or?
Yes, that's a great question. I'm going to continue it when the weather warms up. Right now, I may continue it in the winter, perhaps in coffee shops. There's pros and cons to having it in a coffee shop because you're not getting a lot of foot traffic, and it's a very different atmosphere than having it in a public setting like in a park. So the main goal, though, is to get more people involved, and I've been talking to people around the country, and also I was in Europe a few weeks ago, so I was talking to people across the pond who want to get involved with it. And so I'd love to have other people have their own conversation tables and be doing this different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm. You know, there was a couple of quotes in the article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune that I thought were very good. And one of them said, you know, it feels like a museum exhibit where conversation is the artifact. We kind of covered that a little bit, but even some of the folks talking to you on that table were discussing the same issues.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, that was a quote from, I was quoting one of the people that came to talk to me, and he emailed me later to tell me like how strange, how kind of surreal it was to experience conversation in that way, because... we do kind of run the risk of losing the traditional manner of conversation, and we're losing it to, you know, just very one-sided broadcast conversations that take place on the internet.
And another person I believe that stopped to talk to you said texting and emailing heighten the potential for misunderstandings because you always assume the other person knows your imagined inflections.
Yeah, there's so many problems that arise because of texting when you're being sarcastic in a text and the other person doesn't know that, or you can never really truly understand someone when you're using texting or email, I think.
Taylor, you also have some quite a few. You're a busy guy. You know, you've got like two or three websites going, and you're just full of ideas. Project Centaur, an online idea book. What can you tell us about that?
Okay, so Project Centaur, it's my little pet project. It's kind of strange. It's my online idea book. So I've been, for the past 10 years, I've been collecting little notebooks, which I jot down my ideas. And most of these ideas are kind of ideas for inventions. And they border on the ridiculous, I think most of them are. So this this website is just an archive of all my ridiculous, whimsical inventions on the internet. So
now, my co-host, Bob, he got a kick out of more than one, but his favorite, I think, was the... go ahead, Bob.
The Christmas letter.
Christmas letter.
Yeah, I mean, that, first of all, let me tell you, Taylor, I don't think that they're ridiculous. I think they might be whimsical and fun, but most everybody has gotten, you know, over the course of years, these Christmas letters that people feel compelled to send out, whereby their kids, you know, find a cure for cancer and all other things. Your idea is a little bit different and really good, so tell us what that is.
Okay, so the Christmas letter is kind of playing off the word letter, and what it is an idea to send out actual cutout alphabet letters rather than a written typed-up letter. And you can decorate that little cutout letter. It could be of the letter M or S or whatever, your favorite letter. You can decorate it like a Christmas tree or favorite ornaments or whatever, and you send it to your friends, and that can be your way of giving them a season greeting.
Absolutely. I think it's fantastic. I'm doing it next year.
You know what? Actually, I a few months back, I sent out letters to my friends that were just letters in an envelope, and they weren't Christmassy. And a lot of people are, I think, were weirded out.
So they, they didn't get it, huh?
And then they realized, oh, you sent me a letter thing.
You know, there was another one in there that I kind of liked, Taylor, because I love buying, you know, like a raspberry muffin at their local co-op, and then on the drive home, I can't resist.
Yeah.
So there's crumbs all over the inside of my car. You had a good idea for avoiding that.
Yes. Okay. So this idea, this is going to change your life. It's an idea for a new muffin that instead of having like a, you know, the traditional muffin top, which is like a dome shape, which it's such a mess, you know, trying to eat around the lip of it and all the crumbs falling over you. And if you're at like a cafe or coffee shop and you see someone eating muffin, it's probably like one of the most disgusting things in the world. It's pretty terrible. So this idea, it's a more of a concave muffin, which... It's an inverted muffin, so it's the muffin top, instead of going outward like a dome, it would go inward like a spiral. And so that way, all the muffin crumbs would go right back into the inside the muffin rather than spilling outward. So,
it sounds like a great idea.
You know, thank you.
One of the things about your ideas just make too much sense for people. That's the deal.
They
aren't weirded out. It's just, wow, why haven't I thought of that?
Yeah, both Bob and I. Go ahead. Excuse me, Taylor.
I'm just saying, if there's any bakers out there who are interested in making the muffin, call me.
You can show them how. Yeah, both Bob and I are thinking about starting that unibrow charity event here in town.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so everyone's heard of November, and it's Movember with an M, and it's to raise awareness for. I think it's I'm blanking here. It's
for something.
Yeah, it could be any charity event, huh?
Yes, yes. And it's to raise awareness for different. I think of male related cancers. So I think
that's what it is.
Probably prostate cancer.
Yeah, prostate cancer.
Yeah.
And so Movember, it's a month long event where men can grow mustaches. for the to raise awareness for the charity. But what happens to people who can't grow mustaches, like most women and me? what would we do for an event like that? So I thought of it's another month-long event, and it's called February, I think. And it's, you grow a unibrow for the entire month of February.
So that grows all the way across, but in the middle of your eye.
Yeah, a traditional unibrow, a monobrow.
I'm sure it's going to be a big hit, Taylor.
I hope so.
Yeah, we're really going to give it a good try.
I mean, there's a lot of people who have them already, so.
Oh, that's not right. New. Yeah, the unibrow itself. Not the charity event.
No, not the charity event.
So. Yeah. We've been speaking with Taylor Baldry, and Taylor is a brainstormer. He's an artist designer and a large-nosed person who also has several very entertaining websites. Perhaps you can give the folks out there your websites so they can go take a look.
Sure. Okay, so Project Centaur, which we were just discussing, is projectcentaur.org. And there's also selectatopic.com, which is for the Conversationalist Project. So if you're interested in being involved or participating or just want to know when like the next event will take place, check out selectatopic.com. And then for some of my more traditional art and design, check out my website, which is taylorbaldry.com.
Well, Taylor, we want to thank you so much for joining us here tonight. It's really been fun. And good luck with all your projects.
Thanks, guys. Say hi to Santa for me.
Will do.